Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Live from the corner of Broadway and Battery, Damon Bruce, Ray Ratto, and Matt Kolsky, broadcasting in beautiful downtown San Francisco. This is Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
I think we got to start with the breaking news that has made Ray Ratto the happiest man in San Francisco due to a computer reset and a technical glitch. The soundboard that allows me to play the Maximum Football Sounder, which Ray has sacrificial ceremonies, hoping that would come to an end. He's sacrificing live beings. It must have worked, Ray, because the computer crashed and I cannot touch the Maximum Football button for the foreseeable future. Congratulations. Victory is yours.
Victory is not mine. It's merely a small, it's a small triumph, but it's not victory. Because every time you hit that, a puppy gets a tumor. And I think we all know that.
Well, I don't know that. And I'll say this. I may not have that button, but I have this.
I'm a football guy.
Hey, I'm a football guy. And I love that Manning Brothers broadcast. I think as much as I like any show on TV, like screw Ted Lasso, that's the best show on TV. That Manning Brothers broadcast. I'm dead serious. It was phenomenal again last night. Oh, sure. There was a good football game, too, that was, I guess certainly what Packers fans were looking for. You don't want to go down in flames at home to the Lions, but I'm not going to declare anybody all the way back. And we got ourselves a monster coming up between the 49ers and the Packers. Today we are going to take one look at Philadelphia. Last look at the win, what we take away from it, the good, the bad, the ugly. Our first audience with the King today. Peter King joins us. Alex Pavlovich joins us because the Giants season, gentlemen, we're in the end game. Here it is. 12 games left to decide the fate of all humanity, or at least the National League West.
It's very dramatic.
Well, it's the fun part is, though, that the fight for the wild card, which involves them, also involves other teams that are weird teams, and one which might disturb the Giants some. Because if they end up in the wild card and have to play St. Louis, it means they got to beat Adam Wainwright, which is a pretty tough ask, no matter where you're playing.
Yeah, Adam can spin it one day, and you lost. That's how
he's
works.
He's been spinning it really well, because St. Louis ought to have been finished the day that Jack Flaherty went down. Instead, Adam Wainwright became Jack Flaherty. And because of the format, if you have the best pitcher on that day, you advance, and the team with 104 wins maybe doesn't.
Of course you're right, but Joe Musgrove could do it to them too. You know what I mean? So it's really just, you want to avoid that wild card game at all costs, because frankly, almost any team has one guy who on any given night could just shove it down your throat, and all of a sudden the whole season you played to get into the playoffs barely happens. So of course, you have to avoid the wild card game. And look, the Giants don't have the easiest schedule the rest of the way. I don't think anyone would suggest that they do. But they certainly have beatable teams on the schedule. So you got to go beat them.
Yeah. San Diego's feeling a little particularly frisky. Do you see the shoving match between Tatis and Machado the other night, where he's basically saying, this isn't about you? Talking about, I guess somebody was high on their MVP candidacy.
Tatis hated a strike call and basically blew a tire, you know, with the umpire. Stayed in the game miraculously. Good restraint by the umpire there, but was bitching about it still in the dugout. And Machado came up and confronted him.
That was a little tough love, and I actually liked it. Machado got in his face loudly, admittedly, because he was screaming and yelling at the umpire and was at risk of getting thrown out of a game that's very important to the San Diego Padres. And one of the things he said, too, was, hey, man, everybody knows the umpire's terrible, but this can't be about you. We're trying to get in the playoffs here. I have respect for that, actually.
Especially when you realize that Manny Machado was that guy about 3 years ago.
Uh-huh. Sure was. Yeah. And he's Mr. I don't run hard on every play, he won't live down that Charlie Hustle comment the rest of his career to some people.
No, but I think everybody at the age he was when he did that gets a chance to dig his way out.
Of course.
Because he didn't do it like repeatedly. But it was one time, and it was way overt, and he got screamed at too. So it's the Padres are dysfunctional in about 12 different ways, most of them having to do with the fact they have no pitchers. But that was fascinating because I think they're all sort of on the razor's edge with the way this season has turned out for them, particularly the last month. So
well, and honestly, isn't that where you want your team? Heading down the home stretch, needing to win practically out to get that second wild card spot. Like, I want them frosty. Let's go.
And frostiness begets frostiness. I don't mean to be, this is not a Wendy's commercial. But the fact that the Padres are on edge should keep the Giants on edge. The Giants need to stay on edge because the Dodgers are constantly breathing down their necks. This is a remarkable stretch of 12 baseball nights that we get a front row seat for, and in a sport that we say gets it wrong, screws it up so often, every now and then, baseball saves baseball from itself.
Bill Veeck was the first one to say it. When you think of all the ways that owners have tried to destroy this game, it must be a hell of a game to still be alive.
It really must be. It must be. And I was reading an article Rosenthal wrote in The Athletic today about how, you know, expanding playoffs to 14 teams, like if they're going to expand the league eventually, they got to expand the playoff. Can you let something good just be? I know. But look, everyone thought that the first wild card was a bad idea, and it proved itself to be worthwhile. The second wild card thing was another, all right, you're pushing it, but I think we all agree it makes enough cities lean forward at the end of a season to where it's worthwhile. The only thing I don't like about it is how they have a one game for everything.
Yeah, you could end up being the Giants or the Dodgers and get Adam Wainwrighted, which seems unfair.
What we don't need is half the league making the playoffs. Baseball doesn't need to be like the NBA and the NHL. As a matter of fact, the only relevancy the regular season has left is meaning you better do something today, even though it feels like you got a million mulligans built in. You better do something now to reach the postseason and earn it. A bunch of mediocre teams reaching the postseason is not what baseball's postseason needs.
I think the answer, if you're going to try to fix it at all, is to allow a wild card team to supplant a division winner if they win X more games than that division winner. Let whoever it is, the Braves or the Phillies, go play against the Cardinals, right? That I think, because Ray's right.
Like, you should go by record. It's like the NBA and its seeding in the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference. Just go 1 through 16. There it is.
Yep.
I don't, that part doesn't bother me one way or the other, but I just know the way this is going to go. And I think it's going to be with one more team than even Rosenthal thinks.
Nah.
I think they are basically going to go to the NHL NBA format. Well, in fact, we can't even say the NBA format now because they're now reaching out to get 20 teams. You know, eventually everybody's going to make the playoffs except the last place team in each conference.
You know, it's an interesting debate because I never had an issue with NBA or NHL playoffs being about half the teams. And I actually think, in a way, the play-in tournament situation makes it more likely that you get a better 7 and 8 seed, right? Because you're very often the difference between 7 and 11 is not that big in terms of how good that team is. Right. So let whoever's hot at that moment get in the playoffs. I think you end up with similar, but arguably better entertainment results, if you will. But there is something about the like baseball's maintained playoff exclusivity, because the one game wild card, criticize it as much as we do, and I do, it maintains that exclusivity, because sure, there's a couple extra teams that we allow into the tournament, but only one of them really, because this isn't really the playoffs and anyone could win it. So there's something to that I think matters.
But typically both play-in wild card teams are around 85, 86 wins.
Right.
You don't get the team that's got 103.
I agree with you. Something should be done to avoid a situation where the second best team in baseball goes home after one playoff game.
What they're going to do, though, is they're going to go, you know what? Let's just have a bunch of playoff games. Let's just throw as many at Amazon or TNT or whoever wants to pay for them as we can get, because we're not about the game. We're about the cash.
Yeah. We're about the last 12 games of the Giants season. We're going to have Alex Pavlovich stop on by today. Mark Schlereth called the Philadelphia 49er game over the weekend. He's stopping on by today. Our first conversation with Peter King coming up in about 20 minutes, and we're looking forward to saying hello to him. One of the best covering the NFL, and we got some NBA talk today. It's been a while since we've dove back into the NBA. It is coming so quickly. We're getting press releases from the Warriors about how quickly it's coming. It is going to be here before you know it. So stick around. We are just underway on a gorgeous sun-dress condition laden Tuesday afternoon all around the Bay Area. It's a gorgeous day outside. It's great to have you here on the radio. And let's officially do this. Damon Ratto and Kolsky were brought to you by Mimecast. Safeguard your organization against phishing, business email compromise, and risks of ransomware. Visit Mimecast.com, MIMECAST.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Good to have you along here today. Download that Odyssey app, favorite 95.7 The Game. You'll get breaking news updates, everything we do right there in your pocket. Easy to access anytime you want to. That Odyssey app, powered by DuckDuckGo, privacy simplified. It's wonderful to have you around here today. Ray, I have terrible news.
Maximum!
And another puppy perishes.
We're back, baby. We're back. I mean, I've never seen a technical glitch ironed out as quickly as that was. It just means people want more Maximum Football.
And we'll it means Tim Jordan is way too good at his job.
He's good at his job. We will definitely get to Maximum Football at the bottom of the hour when we've got Peter King joining us for the very first time this season. I know we talked to him during the preseason. For whatever reason, we could not hook up during week one. Boom, right after week two. Niners are 2-0. Peter King coming up at 2:30. We're looking forward to that. In the meantime, I guess we should go over a couple of the other things that are in the news before we get to Peter. And we'll start with a little football news where the 49ers have signed a running back who's officially a big boy. This guy's a hoss. Jaquez Patrick is 6'2", 234 pounds. Going to be the biggest running back Kyle Shanahan's had with the 49ers. He was signed off the Cincinnati Bengals practice squad. He led the Bengals in preseason rushing yards, whatever that means.
Very little.
He went to FSU. He was the fourth highest rated running back recruit in the nation at the time. You know, say what you want about a little pedigree coming from that. He's big. He's got straight line speed. It's a back rarely seen in a Kyle Shanahan offense, who likes the lighter, scattier, quicker cutting type of back. We got a semi-bruiser putting on a 49ers uniform. When he is used, how he is used, we'll find out all out soon enough. But him getting used is very realistic, considering who you can't use, which is basically every running back that we've talked about on this roster so far to this point.
Yeah, he is to Kyle Shanahan what Patrick Ricard is to John Harbaugh, a truck. Patrick Ricard weighs 311 as a fullback. That sounds like an LSU lineman. But I don't remember Kyle Shanahan having a guy of this size as a running back, either here or in Atlanta. I haven't looked back to his previous stops, but.
Definitely not in Atlanta.
Yeah,
he had Alfred. Well, he did have Alfred Morris, I guess, here as well. I was thinking of Washington, but he's not this big.
No.
I mean, he's bigger than some of these other guys. We see a lot of little guys, but, you know, some of the little guys, like Jamichael Hasty, is a brick crap house, whether he's tall or not. So, you know, frankly, actual running backs the size of Jaquez Patrick are few and far between. That's a big-ass dude. And we'll see. We'll see how it goes. It'll be interesting.
Kyle Shanahan likes guys with short femurs. That's the tip-off.
That is a weird way of putting it, but I can't argue with you.
Yeah.
So he doesn't mind if they're top tall. He wants squat legs.
Yeah.
Okay.
It just happens that most of the time, squat legs go with squat torsos.
That is the only contribution to society that the show Entourage gave us, the phrase top tall. Yeah, look at her. She's top tall. Big torso. Anyway, the other thing that's going on in sports before we get to Peter King today is, for whatever reason, the national media is looking at event horizon between Ben Simmons and the Philadelphia 76ers. Now, why are we talking about this? This is a Philadelphia story. Well, It's a Philadelphia story that, whether we want it to or not, is becoming a Golden State Warrior attached rumor. So anything that happens to Ben Simmons or around him, somebody wants to point an arrow straight at the Golden State Warriors and go, huh? What do you think? I don't think much of this, and I certainly don't think that Ben Simmons is doing himself any favors by looking unprofessional. He's not doing the 76ers any favors by trying to boost a little trade value into, I mean, look, he's wildly talented, yet he's massively flawed, and he has undercut Daryl Morey's ability to do what he wants because he's being impatient and says he will never, ever, 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 ever pick up that phone and say, I love you again, Philadelphia. He's not going to report to training camp in any way, shape, or form.
But it's a Warrior story if he goes anywhere in the Western Conference, with about the exception of three teams, because that impacts the teams around them. So it's a story. Now, how much of a story? Not much today, because all it means is they've reiterated what people thought would be their play all along. But I don't know what it does with Daryl Morey. He waited until, you know, the Houston Rockets season was already 10 games in, I think, before he decided to move Harden. So he could just be obstinate and keep him there. You know, and the only question would be, how long does Josh Harris, the owner, want to pay that kind of money for a guy in civvies sitting on the beach?
So as far as the Ben Simmons side of this, not to defend him, because I don't think he's necessarily going about this the right way. But to your point, Damon, I think the reason he is going about it this way, or one of them anyway, is that he doesn't believe the Sixers were doing what they could to trade him, because he knows just as well as we do that the stuff Daryl Morey was asking for was never going to happen type trade packages. So I think his attitude is, I guess the only way to get you to sincerely try to trade me is just to not show up. Because clearly you thought you could just get me there and potentially work things out, or at least showcase me in some way to drive my value up, but I'm not going to play your game.
I mean, he's a hard guy to defend, and I know you're not defending him. But if you look at it and you just say, how can Ben make business happen? I think he's slowing it down more than he's actually speeding it up. And Daryl's over-asking price is the starting point of most negotiations for players who were the number one overall pick in the draft. Like, he knew the, hey, Bob Myers, I would like everyone not named Steph Curry plus the Golden Gate Bridge and your sourdough starter. Like, he wanted everything the Warriors could possibly put on the table, and a little bit more. He knew it was a non-starter when he put it in front of Bob Myers. That's when someone's supposed to say, well, that's not happening, but what about, and now you're negotiating.
Except I think he went so far that people were like, stop it, and just hung up.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think anyone's interested enough with the assets that he's interested in to say, well, we're not going to give you the stars, the moon, and Saturn, but if you take Saturn off the table, we can maybe have a conversation. I just don't think that there is. Ben Simmons seems like the kind of guy a lot of teams would be wildly interested in, who aren't worried about four free throws at the end of game six of a playoff series. You know what I mean? Like, there are a lot of teams that could use Ben Simmons with his flaws as they are right now. But there's just something off-putting about him and his work ethic, which, again, not reporting to training camp, just kind of encapsulates the worst of him leading the conversation. You're telling me the only thing the 76ers asked of you was to work on a massive flaw in your game over the dawn of your NBA career, and you couldn't do it. You refused to do it.
I think is more closely aligned to reality here.
Why do you think that?
I think it only because if he was working on those things, in an aggressive manner, if he was working to improve the gaps in his game, Rich Paul would have found a way to tell us that. And the message we get instead is, I'm not coming back to you guys. This is not about making your game better. It feels like to me, it's, I don't have to do what you say. In fact, you're going to do what I say. It seems more like power than it is play.
Yeah, I'm more playing devil's advocate than defending Ben Simmons, because I don't think he deserves defense in this situation. But I don't know if that's true. And I don't know if it counts as what you're talking about, Ray, but they've certainly put out a lot of videos of Ben Simmons working on his shot and subsequently hitting shots.
So, not in games, though.
But
I'm not saying he's doing a good job of it. I'm saying when Ray is talking about Rich Paul would let us know that he's working on his jumper, they're trying to let us know that he's working on the shot. I just, no one's buying it, right? And I don't know. Certainly, a guy of that talent, where basketball is his job, it's hard to imagine that if he put in the work, he couldn't get his free throw percentage up to the 70 range. You know, not 90, but 70 would be nice. And maybe 55 instead of 12 in the last 3 minutes of a basketball game, right? You know, it defies logic that he would be working at it and not succeeding at it. But I do think that's where, like, teams know more than we do. And if I were to... I haven't made a conclusion, but if I were to conclude that it's less... It's more that he doesn't want to try to get better at these things as opposed to just he can't get it done for despite how hard he's working, it would be more that people, as you said, don't seem as interested as you would imagine you'd be in trading for a 25-year-old with that level of talent.
He's got zero interest in helping Philadelphia rebuild his trade value.
No, because and I'm just surmising again here, because nobody knows anything except that what Chris Paul just whispered in Adrian Wojnarowski's ear.
You mean RuPaul?
I don't mean that.
Cliff Paul.
But I think what it feels like to me is they believe they have all the leverage in the world, that there are teams clamoring for this, and that the real stumbling block is Daryl Morey's asking price, and that if they force him to lower that price, that he'll get moved somehow.
We go from one Philadelphia topic to another that directly affects the Bay Area. 49ers in Philadelphia. It was brass knuckles on a Sunday afternoon. It was a dialed back playbook that once again Jimmy Garoppolo had success with. He walks away from another football afternoon a winner, yet still with much to be desired in the performance. And to talk about that, and two very interesting weeks of NFL returns, we're very happy to welcome back this season Peter King of Sports Illustrated and so many other precincts. Peter, thank you for joining us. It's wonderful to have you. How you been?
I've been great. How about you guys?
Very well. Thanks again for joining us for another ride through football season. And, man, the 49ers, historically, when they start 2-0, out on the road, it usually means good things. As a matter of fact, the last three times it happened, they won the NFC Championship. So they're coming home to take on the Green Bay Packers on Sunday Night Football, a perfect 2-0 with an imperfect quarterbacking situation, wide receivers apparently already in the doghouse, and if you play running back for the 49ers, you're going to the hospital eventually. Like, that's just the way it works.
Well, I mean, the best thing for the 49ers right now is that, look, they, you know, when people ask me about smart organizations in football, the 49ers are one of the first ones I talk about. And one of the reasons is that they have figured out in each of the last 3 years, hey, let's combine two of our East Coast trips and combine them basically into one long plane flight there and one long plane flight back. And then we will also kind of extend our training camp and have a week where, you know, we do the bonding thing in a hotel, first in Youngstown and then in West Virginia. But the reason that I like this, and look, the 49ers are 6-0 in these three combined in these three two-game trips. And, you know, it helps when you play teams that aren't premier teams. I get it. But I think what is smart about this is that, you know, everybody else in the NFC West now, compared to the 49ers, has a disadvantageous schedule, you know, in the last 15 games of the season.
So you're ruling out the possibility that it's just the healing waters of West Virginia that make this happen.
It feels like we are lost, Peter King. I loved your question about the healing waters. Nice hot springs there. Well, sulfur.
Doesn't have to be hot springs or sulfur. They just might be cruddy old tap water.
Could be.
I think it's the falconry. I'm obsessed with the falconry at the Greenbrier.
So I've done a little down the rabbit hole on falconry. It wasn't just based on the Greenbrier. There was another thing that came up, too, in a personal conversation. But Peter King's back, so we'll just forget about the falconry for a minute.
We're coming back to falconry.
Yeah.
So after 2 weeks of watching this team, either live or on tape, what's the thing that you see now that you believe will be true in 7 weeks, as opposed to things that seem like they're hot one day and cold the next?
Well, Ray, I really think there's, you know, you're going to see more and more of Trey Lance. And my feeling is that, you know, this has been almost preordained, especially since Trey Lance had such a good summer inside the team. It's not necessarily anti-Garoppolo. It is pro-Lance. I think that's one thing. But the second thing that really hit me is that whereas a year ago, their defense was on the way to being decimated after Bosa, Solomon Thomas et al., you know, being banged up. And look, I mean, I understand how important Nick Verrett is to the overall design of the defense, but losing him is not the same as losing Bosa. So to me, I think that, you know, clearly they're in a better place after, you know, the first 2 weeks, 3 weeks of their season than they were a year ago injury-wise. And that, even though they have gotten beat up, no question about it, they are in a better place now than they were a year ago.
So you brought up we'll likely see more and more of Trey Lance. Let's just say for the sake of argument that Lance takes over full-time. How is Jimmy Garoppolo seen around the league right now? What kind of value would he have if he became expendable to the Niners?
I don't think he should be expendable. They made a decision in the offseason that I think would be, unless something changes drastically. The reason the 49ers have gotten in so much trouble in two of the last 3 years is because they had okay number two and three quarterbacks, but they didn't have a good backup quarterback situation, right? In the NFL today, if you lose your starting quarterback, in most cases, your season is over. And the 49ers don't want that to be the case. I think it would be a huge mistake, even if Garoppolo goes to the bench before the trading deadline, unless a bad team offers you a one next year for Garoppolo. I'm not trading Garoppolo. I'm keeping him on the roster, and he's going to have a good chance the rest of the season, even if Lance starts starting. Garoppolo's going to have a good chance the rest of the year to play, and so I think it would be a terrible error to get greedy and say, hey, somebody's offering us a two and a three for Garoppolo, let's take it. Well, that two and a three is not going to mean anything if on Thanksgiving weekend Trey Lance goes down and, you know, you've got a gigantic drop-off to your backup quarterback trying to win the last seven games to make the playoffs.
Peter, the average depth of target for Garoppolo in Philadelphia was under 4 yards. Kyle went to as redacted an offense as you've seen him run in a really, really long time, to the point where it looks so rudimentary
where that was either a specific game plan to get past Philadelphia and we won't see much of it, or that's an offense that Trey Lance could be coached up to run. It feels like Jimmy's still here because he understands calculus and trigonometry, and Trey's still on simple arithmetic. That looked like a simple arithmetic offense to me.
I think the reason is that, you know, Philadelphia has got a much better front seven and a much better rush than the 49ers typically are going to face in an average game. I think it'll be much better than what they face against the Packers. If you see the same game plan this week against Green Bay, I will be very surprised. I think, especially with Za'Darius Smith missing from the Packers, they can afford to have Garoppolo hang in there a little bit longer. And that's why, in my opinion, I don't think you'll see that same game plan Sunday.
Peter, looking at what's happened to Brandon Ayuk at the beginning of this season, are you declaring a doghouse issue with him? It also feels like for a tight end that rolls out of bed with 80 catches and 1,000 yards, George Kittle is using the passing game as a break in case of emergency where it looked like he should be a priority.
Yeah. I've been surprised at the lack of targets throughout the first two games there. So we'll see if there's anything there. It might be game plan related. As far as Ayuk goes, I mean, there's got to be something going on internally, guys. Just has to be. You know, he was the fair-haired guy exiting last season. I have not done any reporting on that, but I'll be curious to see what happens. You know, I think they're going to have time to throw the ball this week. I'll be curious to see what happens with both of those receivers.
It seems like they've had basically three wildly different kinds of, or two wildly different kinds of opponents, and now they're going to have a third that's a lot closer to the first than the second. Are there conclusions to be made about this offense in general, other than Kyle's going to take what he's allowed to take? Or is there some other overarching theme that we're missing?
No, I think it's still really early because I think against Detroit, you know that you're going to be able to take some liberties against that defense that you're not going to be able to take against Philadelphia because of the pressure. The reason why this game is so interesting to me as far as what the future holds for this team is that you're going to be able to have some opportunities to give your quarterback time to make plays. So that's why, in my opinion, this Sunday is going to tell you an awful lot about the San Francisco 49ers on offense. And if you see that same sort of dink and dunk, very restricted offense that you saw the other day, then I think it's time to start saying, well, why aren't they playing the kid?
Speaking of quarterbacks having time to make plays, Aaron Rodgers got that last night and certainly made a couple of incredible throws in that game. But also it looked like the Packers defense sort of got it together in the second half. Do you believe that to be the case, or is that just a Lions game where things got out of hand?
No, I mean, the Lions were desperate at the end to match Green Bay score for score. And so I think that game means almost nothing other than, you know, if the Packers, look, you know, somebody asked me earlier today, what did the Packers prove in that game last night? I said nothing other than it's not a five-alarm fire. You know, they were behind to the Detroit Lions in their home opener at halftime. So I am not among those who will say, well, they solved all their problems. They put up 34. They didn't solve all their problems. Their problems aren't solved yet. You know, I will just be very, very curious right now to see whether they can play a good defense and put up 34. Because I don't think that the 49ers are the best defense in the league, but they're a heck of a lot better than the Detroit Lions.
Peter King with us here on 95.7 The Game. We're talking about quarterbacks and time. It looks like the first quarterback who's officially about to challenge
Father Time's undefeated record is Tom Brady, who's off to a remarkable start. And I'll tell you, if he wants to talk about playing until he's 50, and he even comes close to that, do we sort of have to re-examine Bill Belichick's decision to move on from him? Because that looks like one of the all-time blunders if Brady is still this.
That's a really, really good question. But it's so hard to judge what the New England Patriots are doing right now, and to say that about Brady, because I don't really think that Brady would be doing what he's doing right now if he stayed in New England. Remember at the end in New England when his best receivers were Gunnar Olszewski and Jacoby Myers, and his tight end was somebody who nobody ever heard of? So I think it's very easy to say, oh, my God, Belichick's got to be rethinking that. It wouldn't have been the same thing as Brady is doing now with the best skilled players in the NFL.
It's the best team in football. We can say that. Yeah.
Yeah. But I just think this. Tom Brady wanted to go. He had had enough. And it isn't like he left bitterly. And I know this for a fact. I don't care what anybody says to you. Tom Brady will be at Bill Belichick's Hall of Fame ceremony in whatever, 10 years, and he'll sit in the front row, and he's going to give him a big hug and tell him, I love you. And because Tom Brady understands that Bill Belichick meant a lot for his career, but you know what? Sometimes it is just time to go, and it was time to go for him.
Another quarterback that has sort of stood out even beyond standing out is Derek Carr, and I mention that largely because though the Raiders have won two games with no discernible running game, is that going to catch up with them later, or are we looking at the final emergence of a guy who's been on the come for about 8 years?
You know, Ray, I think it's very, very hard to be even remotely critical of anything that Derek Carr has done so far, and also that John Gruden has done so far. And in my opinion, what you saw the other day in Pittsburgh is a perfect example of the way this team should play. Because the way they played the other day, look, I'm with everybody else. What in the world are the what in the world is this team doing not using Henry Ruggs as much as it should? But you know what? I think you can use Henry Ruggs 25 snaps a game if you have to. You don't have to worry about get him in there 45 or 50 plays. So I think they're fine right now, and I think Carr understands that he has the weaponry now to be really, really good.
To what degree do you believe Kyler Murray can maintain this level of performance throughout the year?
I mean, if he stays upright, yes. I mean, look, I'll tell you this right now. In my opinion, the NFC West is the only division in football that you could say this about, and the only one that I think you've been able to say this about for a long time, and that is there will never be a road upset win in the NFC West. Think about it. Whatever team you think is fourth right now, let's say maybe you think Seattle is fourth, maybe you think Arizona's fourth. Is it an upset if Seattle goes to San Francisco and wins? No. Is it an upset if Arizona goes to the Rams and wins? No. I mean, all of these teams are capable of sweeping the other team this year. So I am fascinated by this division, and I think it's going to be incredibly interesting to watch from start to finish this year with them.
Peter, how much have you seen of the Manning Brothers ESPN broadcast to compliment Monday Night Football? I know that you get to talk to players all the time. It's like having
a Hall of Fame quarterback and his brother who's won Super Bowls as well sitting on a couch hanging out. I think it's remarkable television.
I think it is too. I think it's been a lot of fun so far. I think that the person who is with them a lot of times dictates how much fun it is. And clearly they have picked some really good people to be with them. Pat McAfee, I thought, was really interesting last night. But I also think, I honestly, you know what I enjoy? I enjoy when they're by themselves, because I just think there's a lot that they know. And look, I think it's fun to have a good time and to laugh and to do all these things in there. But honestly, if you're watching that game, for the most part, you want to watch a game that has, that you're going to really learn something about the game. And I kind of enjoy when it's not a comedy act, but when they're really talking about football. And I understand they're trying to walk the tightrope between entertaining people and making them laugh and telling them funny stories. But I also think that, I mean, if I had one piece of, if I was writing something about it, I would say, I wish they would get down into football just a little bit more. And because very, very rarely do you have an opportunity. Networks have been trying to get Peyton Manning on TV for years, and he always says no. You know why they want to get him on TV? Because they think he's going to be a cross between Romo and Collinsworth. And so let's let him do a little bit more football. And again, I think it's great. I love watching it. And I'm not trying to be a sourpuss about this, but I would like to see a little bit more football in that discussion.
So is this a triumph of underproduced television, or is it a request for more structure?
What I am saying is I think you absolutely unequivocally can do the exact same thing you're doing now, just don't worry as much about making the audience chuckle with hilarious stories. You have time for that, but you should also tell us, like, you know, could I please hear last night just a little bit about, tell us what you really think about Jared Goff. Is there something missing there? Was McVay right? I mean, let's diagnose Jared Goff for us. Why doesn't he look as good as he did in the first half of 2018? What's the story? I mean, you got two of the best quarterbacks who played in recent years sitting there, and at least one of them is not afraid to say anything. I think Peyton Manning's not afraid to say anything. So anyway, that's all I'm thinking. But listen, be that as it may, what does this say about the future? Hey, look, last year during that playoff game, okay, you know, that ESPN did, what I think it was Tennessee-Baltimore. When they did that game and they had Rex Ryan and Teddy Bruschi and Keyshawn Johnson lobbing Molotov cocktails, I mean, probably 456 people were watching that alternate telecast. I was one of them. It was an absolute total treat, with Rex Ryan ripping the defensive secondary of the Titan, you know, and I forget exactly what the story was, but I think those things are fun and have a chance to change the football media landscape. I hope we see more of them.
Peter, you certainly are on the mountaintop of the football media landscape, and that's why we're so happy to have you back for another season. Thank you very much. We look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you very much.
There he is, Peter King, the one and only. And, you know, he is right. Sometimes when the hosts are good, guests get in the way. It happens, I think, to this show sometimes.
I try to be in the way as much as possible.
I know you do. God bless you.
All due respect to Patrick Willis, that was not the best part of the broadcast last night.
No, it was not. And you know what? they knew.
They cut him quick.
A producer either got in his ear or Manning called an audible, as he so often has looking at Patrick Willis, and said, we got to get out of this play. We're running it right at Patrick, and he's here stopping things. He was not the best part of that broadcast. When the two of them, when Peyton and Eli are just talking a little bit, that's when some of the best stuff comes out. Now, this isn't an example of football analysis, but this is a story that you got as Peyton Manning and Eli were just chatting about what they were seeing.
Every time I played against New England, I used to go and talk to my receivers like in the shower in the far corner. I'm like, don't talk about a play next to my locker because I know it's bugged. I know it's got a hot mic in there. We're in the shower. Very strange to see seven guys hanging out back there in the shower, but take all precautions.
He is joking and not joking.
Yeah, he's taking the old line about the visitor's locker room in the Coliseum and just repurposing it for a modern audience. And there's nothing wrong with that. The thing that Peter said about guests, though, is interesting because I think that's one of the things about the show that probably is going to have to get cleaned up, because that's overproduction. That's, we need more names. And I'm not saying don't have guests. I'm saying have better guests. Have guests that you've thought about, or more importantly, have guests that Manning has thought about.
Have Peyton's friends and not Eli's friends.
Yeah.
I mean, look, McAfee didn't necessarily add to the depth of football conversation, with the exception of the punter stuff.
But he's an entertaining guy.
He was very entertaining and a fun guy to watch the game with down the stretch, as there was pretty much nothing doing in the football game.
Except his bet.
Right, which made it more interesting. On the other hand, week one, Russell Wilson came in very serious about the football part of it, and that was fascinating to watch in a game that was highly competitive. So sometimes you're going to miss on that, and I'm with you and Peter, Ray. I think less guests is probably the way to go in the short and long run, but a few of the right guests, I think, can add a lot.
And you might have to bring some guys back several times, because there aren't that many good guests for this format.
Right.
This format works best, in my mind, when it's as unstructured as possible. And you just trust the Mannings to get you in and out of whatever you need to get in and out of. Let them sort of pick the topics on the fly and just operate it as though the show was almost not produced at all.
Yeah, and you know what? He's still got a long way to go. But I thought, as like a driver of a show, so to speak, Eli made great strides from week one to week two.
From week one to week two, the audience made great strides. We talked about how significant Monday night's opener was. I think 15 million people watched that, with about 800,000 people tuned in for the Manning Brothers broadcast. Nearly 3 million this week around. Word of mouth advertising is still the best advertising that you can have. And a lot of people the next day were saying, that was really good. People picked up on it, and they nearly doubled their audience week over week.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. If you oversell, people will react negatively to it.
Right.
Because what are you trying to tell us? Let us pick. And that's what they've been asking for 50 years in television.
Peter King, one of the best in our first hour, 1 hour down, three still coming up, so don't you move a muscle. We've got Alex Pavlovich all over the 49ers, Mark Schlereth as we look back into the X's and O's of the win over Philadelphia. So stay with us here, Damon Ratto and Kolsky. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank, full-service banking, no compromises.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly! Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.